What's up? Happy Monday. Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Trantz. He covers the team for The Athletic also. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you. In step, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Drantz, what's up, man?
Not much, buddy. The weekend gave us an opportunity to reflect, digest.
Yes.
I think a Canucks trade deadline performance that was quiet for the team, but I think loud for a lot of fans. I think it resonated in a way that I would call, I don't know, it just felt like confidence shattering would be too much, but confidence yes. shaking, I think, would be fair.
Yeah, frustrating, I think, is probably the word I would choose more than anything.
And then the Canucks go out and win on Friday,
mm-hmm.
narrowly against the Minnesota Wild, a performance that I think you can probably call a steal, like a stolen win for Kevin Lankinen, who was phenomenal. And then they put in a poorer performance, although I don't think they were all that bad against Dallas, to be honest with you. I thought that game was right there for them to take, despite the 4-1 scoreline on Sunday. And now the conversation is like minutes, Lekkerimäki, can't rely on him, mm-hmm. and all of that, which, by the way, I also think is a massive overreaction. And so, yeah, lots for us to get into when we open the whiteboard here.
There sure is a lot for us to get into, and we want your texts as well. No guests on the show today because there's so much to get into. We're going to dive into all of it, and we'll take some of your texts, of course, as well. So hit us up in the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. And right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 10th. And the headline is, as you mentioned, Canucks split two games over the weekend as they begin their post-trade deadline playoff push. The win on Friday against Minnesota, then they drop a game against the Stars last night. I think you could easily argue that they played better last night in the loss of the two than they did in the winning game against Minnesota on Friday. And as you said, okay, you split one and you lose to the Stars. Yeah, they're on a back-to-back and they're missing pieces, but it's still a pretty good Dallas Stars team. And yet, and you know, you're still right there in the playoff race and all of that. And yet, whether it's because of the frustration around or the disappointment around the trade deadline, whether it's because of some of the commentary from Rick Tocchet, the just continued frustration with the team's inability to score goals and how punchless they look so often, there does seem to be a pretty growing sense of frustration with this team from the fan base coming out of that loss last night.
Well, and I get it. I get the frustration. You know, so Sundays are tend to be my day off at The Athletic. I don't often go and cover games on Sundays. That's the day that I can watch on TV. So yesterday I had some errands to do, some post-deadline errands, but for the most part, now I've recorded a PDO cast with Dimitri, but for the most part I was able to sit down and watch large sections of like Seattle versus Washington, which was a game filled with ill intent and phenomenal plays. I mean, some really high-skilled hockey. It was a fun game to watch. And then I watched most of that Columbus-New York Rangers game, which was, you know, an epic tome. I mean, the second period alone was a novel in the way that it sort of unfolded. And then I watched that Canucks-Dallas game, and I thought the Canucks were right there in that contest. Like, I think you can see the broad strokes or the outline of a game plan, a narrow path to victory that Rick Tocchet has sketched out here. And it involves being really good defensively, removing O2 from the game, right? Like, really trying to frustrate opponents, play a low event style, lean on goaltending, pounce on mistakes and attack off the rush.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you know, and then you combine it with a high-end penalty kill, which was great again last night, and you can see how that could work to an extent for this team. You could see how that can help them get 5 points over 500 across the last 19 games, or 4 points over 500, which should be enough to punch your ticket to the Stanley Cup playoffs. The problem, I think, with it is, A, it ain't a lot of fun to watch. And I do think that's partly what you're seeing fans react to, mm-hmm. is the aesthetic quality, which is absent. And B, while I do think this approach gives you a floor as a team, I think ultimately when you play a team like Dallas, even if they're playing on the second leg of a back-to-back, they're going to be able to pick it apart. And I think we saw that. Even when there were moments like that first 10 minutes of the third period, it felt like the Stars were really on their heels. But, I mean, that Robertson transition play, I mean, that's just like great player calls game when his team needs it. Finds the insurance marker, game over. Like, yep. You knew in that moment that it was game over. And that was just a phenomenal 150-foot worth of play, to defense to offense from Robertson. The best teams in the league are going to be able to do that to you. Winnipeg is going to be able to do that to you. And so that's where the frustration sets in for me anyway, where it's like, I think this can work against your Minnesotas and your LAs. And if you were 10 points better in the standings and looking at a first round playoff opponent that might be one of those might be in that caliber, maybe. But you're looking at Winnipeg. And I just don't think a negative counter-punching style of hockey is going to work at all against a Jets team that we've seen can just kind of pass through the Canucks and actually be more patient than them. Wait them out, mm-hmm. them out, and then score in sort of bunches against the Canucks and just bury them in a quick 5-6 minute stretch. I mean, that's what I think that's going to look like if the Canucks are playing this way. So with their personnel, does it look a little different with Hughes? Oh yeah, no question. But yeah, I do this professionally and I love hockey. I've always got it on. And even I'm like, oh man, this ain't a lot of fun. If I'm feeling that way, I can't imagine what casual fans feel like.
Yeah. It's been a tough watch. It's been a tough watch at different points. And I think the other, beyond just the aesthetic stuff, right, as I was kind of thinking about where the conversation is right now and waking up this morning, you know, listening to Halford and Brough and looking at the inbox and all that, a big source of the frustration, I think, and around the trade deadline and right now is, so there's no moves at the trade deadline. You know, we had our say about that after Friday, on Friday after the deadline passed, about how disappointing it was and frustrating. And I think for fans now, you know, it's one thing if you are on the playoff bubble and you don't really sell, but you do it because it's a statement of your belief in this team, right? Hey, this, like, we believe these, we have the pieces here. This is a team we like. Yeah, things have been tough for us. We've faced a lot of adversity, but we want to see what these guys can do down the stretch. But the organization itself very much seemed frustrated that they weren't able to do things, that they didn't get better offers, right? So it's not so much we stood pat because we really believe in what we have and we really like it. It's, we stood pat just kind of because we were forced to by the rest of the league. And that's just a tough way of framing it. And I think fans are reacting to that kind of perception. And then even you hear Rick Tocchet after the game, mm-hmm. and he's not happy with his star players, right? Hey, you got to earn your ice time. So there's just this overall sense, I think, from the team of frustration. You know what I mean? Like, you look at the key decision makers, Patrick Galvin, I thought, sounded frustrated. Understandably so. I get it. That's not a criticism. I thought he sounded frustrated on Friday. I thought Rick Tocchet sounded frustrated last night, right? Elias Pettersson scores a nice goal against Minnesota, but not really a factor last night. I think there's obviously a lot of frustration there. It's just, it's hard not, when you're a fan and you're watching the team and all of the key figures seem frustrated to one degree or another, I think it's very difficult for you not to start to feel really frustrated as well.
Yeah. And, I mean, a lot of talk about Pettersson and Besser's ice time.
Yeah.
Last night. Pettersson was on the ice for one shot on goal. One Canuck shot on goal, 5-on-5 across 12 and a half minutes.
Man.
Two goals against, by the way. So more goals against than shots for. Brock Besser on the ice for a goal against, three shots for in 13 minutes. You know, Jake DeBrus, three shots for. They weren't going. You know, I'd be all in to criticizing Rick Tocchet if he was making moves that genuinely like hurt this team's mm-hmm. live win probability. But when your guys aren't going and all of a sudden in the third period, you're going to skip them a couple shifts because you're not getting what you need out of them, especially when you've designed this narrow path on how to win low event hockey games and they don't got it. I mean, what do we really think Pettersson or Besser playing two extra shifts in the third period would have done to the Canucks' win probability? An extra percent and a half? If you're picking that moment, a game you're already almost certain to lose, to send an overall point about accountability and effort level and how we need to play to win, I don't know. That seems to me to be something where I'll defer to a coach. Personally, that's just my view of it. I also thought the way that the Lekkerimäki comments were interpreted was, I don't know if I'd say it was like intellectually dishonest.
Well, I didn't. Yeah. So,
but I thought people are misunderstanding the point he's making. You can't rely on him doesn't mean he isn't reliable.
Or that he won't be reliable.
Okay.
Yeah, I do this thing where I
thought there was an earthquake.
I bring my foot up.
Yeah, yeah, and you slip.
And it. No. It's not that I slip. I hit the button on the chair.
Got it.
That adjusts the height, and as a result, I like tap it and I plummet downwards.
Okay. For those audio listeners, which is everybody, by the way, Jamie just had one of those Family Guy moments where like one frame he was here and the other frame he was there, and it just like took me for a loop. Anyway, the Tockett's comment on Lekkerimäki after the game. I think he's coming a little bit. He's trying, but you know, he's a young kid. You can't rely on him. That's not, you can't rely on this guy. In fact, that's, hey, he's playing. He's playing well. We like what we're seeing, but he's a young guy. It's not fair.
Yes.
For him to be the guy who I need to win me games by scoring clutch goals for our hockey team. That's not reasonable. And by the way, he's totally right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
No, I didn't read that as him taking a shot at Lekkerimäki at all.
No. It was not that. That is absolutely not what it is. And anyone saying otherwise is willfully, in my opinion, misunderstanding. Most likely because there's a huge amount of frustration about the way that this team's playing. And oftentimes, as we've seen, when you lose, blame gets proportioned to the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like that's how this market in particular hates their coaches, I would say. I don't know. Is that fair?
I don't know if I would necessarily agree with that. I think they can turn on their coaches when they're not winning, for sure.
I think this market doesn't like coaches.
Just all coaches.
Pretty much. Like, Alain Vigneault was, like, widely made fun of.
Yeah.
His entire Canucks tenure, and he's the winningest coach in franchise history. Tockett's second. People are out.
Yes.
He can't coach offense. Well, it's so predictable.
Tockett might be out. We'll see.
Yeah,
because that's the other part of this.
Totally.
There's so much uncertainty beyond this season. I think that's why some fans are really having, even, okay, because like there is a school of thought from fans. We get the text in, hey, maybe you were frustrated they didn't do more at the deadline, but all right, playoff push now, 19 games left. Let's see what this team can do. Those just aren't the vibes you're getting from the team itself. So it's hard to have those vibes as the fan, as fans, when the coach and everyone else seems not particularly happy with where things are and where the team is. Let's move on to the broadsheet here, because there is a lot out there to dissect post-trade deadline. Now, of course, Elliot Friedman over the weekend on Hockey Night in Canada, and I think reiterating it on 32 Thoughts today as well, saying, look, it was pretty simple with Brock Besser. Canucks were asking for a first. They were not offered a first, therefore they kept him. They did not want to bend on their price that they had set already for the player.
Yeah, I wrote that in my column Friday.
Okay.
Newly reported by Friedman on Saturday, which you reported on Friday. Thanks, Jamie.
Sorry.
Dom is so offended. He's like, how dare you take a shot at the cash cow?
Respect the king.
What? The person who reported the thing 24 hours after me? Okay.
Do I include you in the broadsheet?
I don't know.
You're just on the show.
Well, I don't. Don't tell it to me like it's new to me. I reported
send
it.
This clip to Friedman.
Look, some.
I'm not. I don't care.
I try to keep up with your content at The Athletic, but sometimes it falls through the cracks. All right. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's out there from both Thomas Drantz and Elliot Friedman. This morning, Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly says that, this is how he phrased it. Some say that Eric Tulsky, of course, Carolina Hurricanes GM, called Vancouver and offered one of the first round picks they got in the Rantanen deal for Besser in the last half hour before the trade deadline. Canucks turned it down because they didn't want to get worse. Now, that's an interesting report, obviously contrary to what you and Elliot Friedman both reporting. What? I got to do it now. You're very sensitive to it.
No, I just, man, I had it on Friday. I don't know what to tell you.
Anyways, Patrick Johnson of Post Media also reported that there was interest in Besser from Carolina, but that it might have been a bigger deal where it was Besser going to Carolina, a first-round pick coming back to the Canucks, but also Kotkaniemi coming back, and as a result, Carolina would have wanted a top prospect of some description from the Canucks, and that's where the talks broke down. So is what Rick Dhaliwal's reporting kind of a part of that? Well, which is that, yes, there was a first-round pick on the table, but only as part of this larger deal, which the Canucks weren't interested in. Was there ever a first-round pick on the table in any description? It's just out there. And I guess I mean, my gut says if there was a first one-for-one straight up, that they would have pulled the trigger.
I think so, too.
That's what my gut says. So, I could be wrong.
I need to circle back a little bit on Dhaliwal's report before I comment at great length on it. But yeah, I mean, my understanding matches Friedman's, which is that the Canucks were never tabled a first-round pick for Brock Besser. I do think there was interest in Pugh Suter, and I think that was the one that might have been more elective on the Canucks' end. I think there's a relatively high level of optimism that they might be able to keep him. I was also told over the weekend to expect the Canucks to make at least another offer to Besser before July 1, which you'd expect given that they've kept him beyond the deadline. I think reflecting on the deadline over the weekend, and, you know, covering the deadline is such a mess from a workload perspective for us.
Yes.
It occupies so much mental space.
More for you.
But there's also like 8 weeks there, especially because of the Miller thing. Like, really, since January, it's been like, I need to, you know what I mean? Like, I take a shower, I come out and quickly check my phone, right? Like, and so there's a stress level that ends, and then you react to it. And look, I expected the Canucks to be busier. I always expect this front office to be busier. I always expect them to be pretty aggressive. And my understanding was that they wanted to be.
Yeah.
Both as buyers and sellers, and they weren't able to execute either aside from a small Carson Soucy deal. And I do think price enforcement played a big role in that. I do think the club's positioning in the standings played a role in them making sure that they kept their prices high. It wasn't a feeling that we just have to take what we can get, right? We are going to push to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. In fact, we'd be really confident that we're a playoff caliber team if not for the Hughes-Demko situations, right? Like, the Canucks would really like their chances if not for injuries and the uncertain injury status around Demko and Hughes. And so there's this interesting sort of split, Jamie, where a lot of what the Canucks did at the deadline could, in 3 months, look totally different than the way it's being talked about in real time.
How so?
Well, they could make the playoffs. They could account for themselves credibly in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And they could retain two or all three of those pending UFAs. And if that occurs, we're going to look back on it and talk about it completely differently than we will if they miss the playoffs and Brock Besser walks.
Yes.
Right? I mean, there's a relatively wide spectrum of possible outcomes
that will influence
how it's viewed.
I think the performance in the first round has to be pretty excellent.
Yeah, it has to be credible.
Yeah.
Without question. And they have to both get there and account for themselves well.
Yes.
Okay, so my point being, there's this relatively large spectrum of outcomes, which is always true at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have to do, what we're left to do, is judge in real time the bet that the Canucks made. And I think what I keep coming back to is what I think remains my fundamental critique of the Rutherford-Alvin axis, right? I think there's been a lot of good work to, don't get me wrong, in terms of cap discipline, pro scouting, right? I think there's beginning to be some pretty interesting returns from their amateur scouting operations as well. Obviously, Elias Pettersson and Jonathan Lekaramaki are trending pretty in a pretty exciting way in terms of contributing next year, as soon as that next year. I mean, right now, but also next year. We'll see about Tom Volander. But I do think there's a trend that I've been preoccupied with the whole way, whether it's worked out or not, where they're so focused on hockey fit. And I think they're pretty good at finding it. I think that's why the Hronek trade worked, right? The fit with Hronek Hughes exceeded our wildest imaginations, and that justified the deal. And yet, what do you get for it, even if you're right? is still something that I would say about that deal. Like, you've won a playoff round, you know? So that remains something that we'll see play out. It's the loss of value that I'm preoccupied with now. And I think you saw it in spades at this deadline. This deadline was such a useful flashpoint for it for us, where Kuzmenko, Vinny Deharnay, and Daniel Sprong are all guys that the Canucks, on contracts currently signed by this Canucks front office, who were all dealt as negative value parts of a trade, right? Sprong for future considerations, returning nothing. Vinny Deharnay as like a bad contract we have to include in the Marcus Pettersson deal, partly to juice the return for Pittsburgh. And then obviously Kuzmenko thrown into the Lindholm deal to make the money work, right? That's a negative value part of that trade. All of those guys returned draft picks at the deadline. Kuzmenko got a third. Deharnay got a fifth. Sprong even returned a positive asset for the Seattle Kraken. It was a sixth or a seventh, late round pick. Am I going to cry about a late round pick? I'm not. But I do think it's worth noting that for the benefit of constructing this fringe playoff team, that's value that the Canucks left on the table. They traded Carson Soucy on the same day that the Anaheim Ducks traded Brian Dumoulin, who is not as good as Carson Soucy. Dumoulin returned a second and a prospect. Soucy returned a third. Why? Soucy had an extra year. And Soucy had, because he had the extra year, the Ducks were able to retain on Dumoulin. The Canucks weren't going to tie up their cap space for multiple years. In hockey, value vacillates. And repeatedly, we see this team struggle to find those like arbitrage opportunities. And the fact that you then keep Besser, Suter, Forbert beyond the deadline, although I was told there wasn't a ton of interest in Forbert. Nice goal last night. First as a Canuck. The fact is with those three, there's now the risk of even more opportunity cost incurred, value lost, bleeding value, yep, sort of at every window of opportunity. Besser didn't have value. Well, that hasn't been true his entire Canucks tenure. Right? Like, there were surely moments where you could have monetized Besser for significant value. It's just something that this club never does, because in the moments that he has value, they see him as a hockey fit. And in the moments that he's no longer a hockey fit, he doesn't have value.
Mm-hmm.
And like, at some point you have to make the hard decision to accumulate as opposed to just playing sort of value whack-a-mole, where it's like, oh man, we love our center depth, but we have nothing on defense. Now we've weakened our center depth and we love our defense. And it's just like, yeah, you've just moved value around as opposed to accumulated it. And I think as I've considered this deadline, that remains consistent with sort of my biggest concern about how the Canucks have done business in this new, far more competent regime, remains just a lack of focus on value. Long-term, building value long-term is just something this organization has not prioritized at all. And I think that's a problem, especially when you see how the best teams in hockey go about their business.
We'll whip through the rest of the whiteboard here. Lineup notes. No practice today. The team's having an optional workout and then media availability. So I would expect that we'll get some Rick Tocchet audio to chew on here at some point during the show. And, of course, big question around roster and lineup stuff is going to be the status of Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko. And also just worth noting that more line juggling from Rick Tocchet last night in that game against Dallas, with Bluger being reunited with Joshua and Connor Garland among the highlights there. Next game, of course, against Montreal tomorrow, and then they go play Calgary in Calgary on Wednesday. And speaking of Calgary, playoff standings update. Canucks playoff odds continue to dive. They're now down to 54% chance to make the playoffs in Dom's model. They are 1 point back of Calgary with the same number of games played. Of course, they play the Flames in Calgary on Wednesday. 19 games remaining. And I want to, at some point in the show, kind of dive in to the math of all of this, right? Like, what various teams need to do to get to whatever bar you think, where we think that bar is going to be in the Western Conference, because it's getting pretty interesting. It is very much in crunch time here for all of these teams.
Gambling odds, Canucks, yep, are now plus money to make the playoffs, plus 100 to make the playoffs. That's the first time all season that the Canucks have been plus money to qualify for the Stanley Cup playoffs. Additionally, Quinn Hughes, with the game he missed yesterday, can no longer hit the 70-game milestone this season, which tends to be pretty important in the minds of awards voters.
Yep.
He's now 10-1 to win the Norris.
Well, and Makar had that 6-point game, right?
Yeah.
So it's tough.
And Zach Werenski and the meat grinder Columbus Blue Jackets are looking like quite a wagon. And if that team makes the playoffs, there's going to be a lot of momentum for Werenski too. So unfortunately, I think for reasons well outside his individual performance, Quinn Hughes not going to repeat as Norris, remains, however, the best defenseman on the planet, especially when he's 100% healthy.
CIBC Smart Everyday Banking helps you easily track your spending with confidence. Get $450 when you make the switch. Visit CIBC.com/smart. More Canucks talk on the way. Send your text in 650-650. We'll be right back here on Sportsnet 650.